So I tried last year to present an idea which was that maybe there is something like a new paradigm that is developing now, something that is that we need actually in different disciplines, even if we have different objects or subjects of research. But conceptually speaking, we are in need of something that is giving the order of something flowing, because our societies are flowing. Our society are fluid and fluent. So we need a concept that match this new reality that we are living in. So basically that's the idea I developed last year. This time, because I saw the program, I saw that you already studied different authors like Gilles Deleuze and then Lefebvre. I may try to present to you a larger view, not concentrating only on one author. I will do that with Michonik afterward, but for the presentation, the beginning of my presentation, I will talk about the context, the intellectual context of the 1970s, because something changed at that time. And actually, I was a student at that time, so I knew some of them. I mean, some of those people I knew directly, but doesn't make easier to understand what happens. Now we can see that something was happening and the people didn't know about it, actually. So we just realize it now. So that's the the point I would like to develop now. Maybe you read online my text, A Short History of Rhythm Theory since the 1970s. This text was presented in Denmark 5 years ago. They wanted me to present a website which was new at that time. It was founded in 2010, and they were eager to know what it was about. So I didn't know how to present it. So I just explained what I studied before doing that and why I developed this website, so I won't repeat what you may have read online. And in this text, I mentioned a kind of constellation. I like the metaphor. Constellation of thinkers, sociologists, philosophers, specialists in literature and art, who in the late 70s and the early 1980s took for a decade, maybe a longer time than a decade, rhythm as a key subject. I think it is worth describing this constellation again because it makes sense when you compare those people you have been told already. I think it will enable us to better understand the context in which rhythmology and rhythm analysis reemerged in the 70s after a period of relative oblivion, because rhythm has been a very important subject at the beginning of the 19th century and the first half of the 20th century. A lot of studies were made using rhythm as a concept or aiming at rhythm as an object, both of them. Explicitly sometimes, most of the time, and sometimes implicitly, but many people were interested in rhythm at the beginning of the 20th century. And then, suddenly, it disappeared. I mean, at least for 15 years, in the 50s, in the 60s, rhythm was not anymore a scientific subject. It was not considered as a scientific subject. And in the 70s, something happened, and it became again a subject for research. So, I don't know if you're familiar with this period, but in France, at least, everybody knows about the 60s. I mean, the series of books that were published in the 60s, I mean the structuralist paradigm, especially in 1966, with very important books like Foucault, Les Mots et les Choses, or Les Écrits de Lacan, the writings by Lacan, or Althusser, published in 66. But nobody knows about the 70s anymore. I mean, as would-be paradigm. So let's try to figure out how those people were connected together through rhythm and what it may say to us now when we are reflecting on rhythm. So let's start with the first one, Henri Lefebvre. He, as you know, was a marginal Marxist. He was aloof from the Communist Party and mentor of the French students who launched the rebellion movement in 68. He was quite old at that time because he was, I think he was born in 1900, so he was 68 years old already. But he was probably the first to pay attention to rhythm, because if you read, in 68 he published Le Droit à la Ville, he mainly worked on city or city planning, urbanization. And in Le Droit à la Ville, you have already some mentions of rhythm. In 1974, La Production de l'Espace, Production of Space. And there, again, rhythm was not essential, but was already clearly thematized as a conceptual tool useful to sociology, especially for the sociology dealing with urban and daily life. In 85, he wrote an article with his wife, Catherine Régulier, entitled Le Projet Rythme Analytique. It was in 1985. So you see, then the end of the 60s, 70s, and the 80s, and his last reflection were finally published posthumously in 1992 under the title Éléments de rythme analyse. And his book is not much of an impact, or had not much of an impact in France, but it showed that Lefebvre spent the last 20 years of his life to reflect on rhythm, because as published, those are the last writing he wrote during these 20 years. Yet, in 2004, as you know, there was a translation of this book in English, into English, under the title Rhythm Analysis, Space, Time, and Everyday Life. He became again a kind of star, actually more in Anglo-Saxon or English-speaking countries than in France. It's not that visible in France, even if recently there was a PhD thesis that was presented in Lyon by a young woman, Claire Revol. She published a few texts on rhythmos too. And her PhD thesis is entitled La rythme analyse chez Henri Lefebvre, Contribution à une poétique urbaine. So, trying to figure out to look at sociology but from poetics. As announced in the very first page of the book, the rhythm analytic program, as designed by Lefebvre, aimed at developing, I quote, a critique of the thing and of the process of thingification or reification in modern thought. This is not my translation, it's the English translation, but you know, thingification, reification, it's a category that was used at the time, especially in Marxist theory. It was, I quote, led in the name of becoming, of movement, of mobility in general. It's on page 3. In other words, it was thought of as a reactualization of Lefebvre's peculiar Marxist program, of his critique of modern man. That is to say, his critique of repetition and rigidification of modern life. But this critique of daily life in capitalist societies was now intended to be elaborated from the most concrete reality, its rhythm. So rhythm became at that time for Lefebvre the central concept. Finally, only rhythm could reintroduce fluidity and make us again in touch with experience, because there was the analytical side of his work, but also the political proposition or suggestions. 1 year after, just 1 year after, in 1975, Foucault wrote one of the most beautiful books on social and body rhythms, Discipline and Punish. From the rhythmic point of view, Foucault's analysis in Discipline and Punish has proved to be a real breakthrough. He doesn't mention rhythm, never mentioned rhythm as a concept, but he talks about it all the time. The rhythmic transformations that we observe in the West in 19th century cannot be accounted for only, as mainstream Marxist thinkers claimed, by the development of industrial work, or as unorthodox Marxist critiques, as Krakauer Benjamin asserted in the 1930s, by the development of transportation, communication, reproduction devices. But they have to be explained also by the emergence of a new legal and political system, namely modern democracy. That's the point, I mean, the central point in Discipline and Punish. So in order to build this case, Foucault concentrated on one institution, as you know, prison. Prison might seem marginal in terms of its operation, but it is in fact a place where the rhythmic techniques that spread in the West since the 17th century were brought to their greater intensity, and therefore where it is possible to observe them relatively easily, while they are often gently and invisibly working in the rest of society. So because many people were very critical about this book, saying, yes, he compares the modern society with prison, this is a caricature, but he's not doing that at all. It's just looking through prison and shedding light, I mean, from there, on the whole society, which is a kind of different perspective. And if you look at what he's doing, actually, in prison, he's looking at the rhythm of life, the life rhythm of the prisoners, the rhythm that are imposed on them. So prison is a kind of rhythmic total institution whose program aims at transforming individuals by a constant beam of rhythmic techniques. Radiating from this center, Foucault attempted to describe the series of institutions, school, army, factory, hospital, and court, where, from the late 16th century, new manners to organize the flow of bodies and language, which have become features of the democratic era, have been developed. So he's trying from the prison to grasp all those rhythms that organize our life, I mean, in modern societies. So it's striking to see how Foucault, just as Lefebvre, tried to bring political analysis on rhythmic ground. In both cases, the questioning aimed at the rhythms which were imposed upon life in modern societies. If we turn to Barthes, in 1976-77, he started his teaching at the Collège de France, so Sunil talked about it last session, with a course on idiorhythm among the Oriental monks during the Roman Empire, entitled Comment vivre ensemble, How to Live Together. A very strange lecture, actually, and destabilizing for many people, because especially literary people, they don't know what to do with this lecture, the first lecture of Barthes in Collège de France. He's talking about monks. So where are the novels and poetry and literature? Well, no. He's talking about monks. And actually, it makes sense if you compare with Foucault and Lefebvre. Because what is he doing? he began to reflect on what could be a community where everyone would follow its own rhythm, its ideal rhythms. To explore this question, Barthes developed a thorough analysis of the history of monasticism. He spotted a big contrast between cenobitic communitarian monks, I mean in the West mainly, constrained by strict rules and especially schedules, especially rhythmic rules, and others called idiorhythmic, mainly in the East, who happened not to have any rule, I mean rhythmic rules, except their own. This opposition, claimed Barthes, takes its full meaning only if referred to a very special acceptation of the term rhythm. And he then recalled the famous article by Benveniste on the concept of rhythm in its linguistic expression. So it's a very old article, but very important, 1951. Was republished in a collection of articles in 1966 called Problème de linguistique générale. And he summarizes the subject of this article. Before Plato, who created the current metric acceptation of the current metric meaning, let's say, as a succession of, so Plato created the current metric meaning as a succession of strong and weak beats, or short or long time length, arithmetically organized. I mean, this is in the laws, rhythmos, kineseos, taxis. Rhythmos, kineseos, taxis. So that means rhythmos is kineseos, movement, taxis, the order of movement. And that's the most famous definition of rhythm that was given by Plato. There are others, but they are not different. I mean, this is the most famous. So, before Plato, who created this new meaning of the word rhythmos, the word meant as schema, eidos, it meant a form. It's quite simple. It's only a form. But whereas schema or eidos meant a fixed form, completed and posited as an object, for instance, a statue, for instance, a choreographic figure, rhythmos was denoting merely the pattern of a fluid element, a form of that which is moving, mobile, fluid, a form of that which has no organic consistency. For instance, when you write a letter, this has a rhythmos, this has a form, but the form is not exactly fixed because it could be different. You know? Another example given by Benveniste is the peplos, so a cloth. You put a cloth on a chair, it has a form, but this form is impermanent because when I take it again, I put it again, it has another form. So this was rhythmos, a form, an impermanent form of something flowing mainly. So let's say it was a way or a manner of flowing. So I will come back to this analysis again and again. But I return now to Barthes. Historically, idiorhythmic communities have always referred to this ancient acceptance or this ancient meaning of the word rhythm. Idiorhythmy has been defined as a personal manner as opposed to regulated or imposed manner to make one's life flow. The idiorhythmic communities, therefore, have the objective to protect the rhythmos, so I quote Barthes, that is to say, the soft, available, mobile rhythm, a transient form, but still a form, against all attempts to rhythmically frame, that is to say, masterize, maîtriser, but it makes a kind of play on words. He writes maîtriser with an M-E accent, like a meter, not like master. So, but it's play on words saying you master your life by metrifying it, or something like that. Metrize with the E. So masterize the algorithm. I translated masterize. But so probably without knowing it, Barthes was going in the same direction as Lefebvre and Foucault. Since the structuralist universalism heralded by Lévi-Strauss was dying at that time, and mainstream Marxism was on the verge of collapse, he too thought that the rhythmic organization of life was worth studying historically and elaborating theoretically to find a way to a new ethics and new politics. 1977, Michel Serre published La naissance de la physique dans les textes de Lucrèce, translated in 2000 as The Birth of Physics, which was dealing with the rhythmos issue in Greek and Roman physics, especially in Lucretius' De Rerum Natura. As Barthes, Michel Serre cited Benveniste, but surprisingly, this time to oppose his interpretation. There's a bit of polemical criticism against Benveniste in Michel Serre's work in 1977. The linguist, I quote, "The linguist," he argued with a bit of philosophical haughtiness, "has not recognized the true nature of the pre-Platonic rhythmos, which is a vortex in the flow, a form adopted by atoms in conjunction of in the first dinos." So according to him, rhythmos before Plato, so you see that the discussion, they all agree that we have to get rid of Platonic idealism. I mean, this is the enemy. But what's the alternative? And then they do not agree about that. So, and he says, Benveniste, what he says about rhythmos before Plato is not convincing, because rhythmos, according to him, was actually the form of the vortexes or the vortices that are forming in the primordial world, according to Democritus and Leucippus. I mean, the main proponents of materialism and atomism in 5th century BC. And he says it was not an impermanent form, it was much more than that. It was a vortex. The linguist, I quote him, like Heraclitus, so he opposes also Heraclitus, Montaigne and the rest had never sailed in fresh water. Nothing flows as they thought. Direct physical experience, simple practice, reveal the rhythmos in the rain. The rain is rain is the verb to say flowing, to flow. So the rhythmos in the rain, so that in the flow there are vortices. Or the vortex in the flow, or the reversible in the irreversible. Rhythm is a form, yes. It is the form adopted by atoms in conjunction in the first dinos. In the beginning is the cataract, the waterfall of atoms in Lucretius. Here is the reversibility to this irreversibility, thus rhythmos. That's page 154 in the English translation. So very harsh critique against Benveniste, but actually I really checked. It's supported by very little philological evidence, if any. Michel Serre is obviously projecting posterior concepts on Democritus' atomism. The cataract, the waterfall, the clinamen, I don't know if you are familiar with those concepts, and the vortex are borrowed from Lucretius. And Lucretius lived in the 1st century BC and apply to older atomist doctrine. Most of Serre's claims are not compatible with philological evidence. As far as we know, Leucippus and Democritus did not use the term rhythmos. I checked that all texts available, they never use it, to name the primordial dinos. The dinos is the first vertex. They did not view either the generation processes of the bodies populating the world as vortices, except for the larger cosmic bodies like the moon, the sun, the earth. Those were brought about by stochastic encounters. I mean, for atomist thinkers, there are atoms, they are flowing, but they are bouncing back and mingling, and sometimes agglutinating and making bodies, but not always with vortices, as Serre claimed. By contrast, there are sufficient evidence to legitimately think that rhythmos was used to refer to the impermanent yet consistent form of atomic compounds. In other words, that Davinis was right and Serre wrong about the pre-Platonic meaning of the term. So this was a discussion in 1977, so you see that rhythmos was taken as something important, and there was some debate about it, and very interesting actually to see what happened. Serre was wrong. I mean, wrong for the definition of rhythmos before Plato. Nevertheless, Serre's reflection was very inspiring regarding rhythm per se. I'm not saying that he was wrong to look at Lucretius' physics and Archimedes' physics, actually. And his books is very interesting. But on Davinis, he's wrong, but doesn't matter. It's better to know it. He brilliantly uncovered two important aspects of Greek science that before his research were, if not entirely ignored, at least largely underestimated. I mean, first, the genuine power of the older mathematics to develop infinitesimal calculus. So that changes a lot. The rhythmos problem, because mainly when Plato is explaining rhythm is the order of movement, he thinking of an regular order, arithmetical order, with rational proportions. So because his mathematics is very simple, and Serre demonstrated that there was another mathematics that was available a few centuries later, through Archimedes, actually. And he says maybe Democritus, but then really there's no evidence. So genuine power of the older mathematics to develop this infinitesimal calculus, and also the central significance of the hydraulic model for physics. In Archimedes, it's a physics about fluids. So you see how all those concepts are connected. Since both innovations allow to overcome some limitation of former arithmetic and geometry, and get beyond those of physics due to the primacy of statics and Pythagorean mathematics, both have produced the conditions for a significant redefinition of rhythmos, but not before the 3rd century BC. We don't have any evidence of earlier redefinition through mathematics. I mean, only Archimedes explained how to make infinitesimal calculus. I mean, pre-infinitesimal calculus. Regarding politics and ethics, Serre relied on the weak suggestions made by Lucretius, who defended, as Barth actually, small communities. If you look at ethics and politics in De Rerum Natura, you see that he's defending a political statement, which is, it's not worth to do politics. It's too dangerous, especially in the 1st century BC. It was very, very dangerous. It's much better to be with friends, enjoying living together and developing artistic activities. So, and it's exactly the same politics and ethics as Barth, because Barth, he says explicitly, I mean, the model that we can extract from idiorhythmic monasticism is maybe worth for 8 or 10 persons, not more, for very small groups, very small groups. So for me, it's a limitation, obvious limitation. But you see that it has some relation with 68, I mean, the ideas, communities in the 60s and the 70s that were, and even Serre, who was considered as a serious philosopher of science, I mean, he was interested in that kind of politics. So he was faithful to the spirit of 68. However, his work opened a new door for rhythmology. I mean, if we are interested in rhythmology in general, there is something that has to be understood in Serre's work in 1977. It's something new that was not in Lefebvre, that was not in Barthes, that was not in Foucault's work. And it showed indirectly, unwillingly, because I explain why, that Benveniste's suggestions could be read not only through their sociological consequences, but as a discussion of the notions of form with a capital F, that means the idea, Platonic idea. So it could be discussed, the rhythmus subject could be discussed as an implicit critique of Platonic idealism in favor of a materialist atomistic doctrine. And so Serre is not that much opposed to Benveniste, even if he says he is. The same year, 1977, Edgar Morin published the first volume of The Method. It's a very, very long work, I mean, six volumes, I don't remember exactly. And the first volume, the foundation of this huge project, designed to introduce into social science the notions of complexity, of emergence. Those notions were borrowed from the new physics and natural science. And Morin did not refer to the concept of rhythm, but I think you have the, we have, I mean, a book, you can mention it. Alors, Michel is work is Swiss, working sometimes in New York, and is using Morin as others are using Lefebvre, as I'm using Michonik, in order to talk about rhythm, and he specializes in education sciences. But I think there is something common here, even if it's not mentioned as rhythm. I mean, complexity, emergence, those new concepts, the stakes involved in his research program were very close to those of his contemporaries. So I won't go into details because it could be long. But one may notice that Morin and Serre approached rhythm from natural science this time, which was a way to give it a new but difficult meaning. But as a matter of fact, there have been absolutely no communication between the two sides. I mean, the political, ethical side, I mean, Lefebvre, Foucault, Barthes, already having difficulties together, but with the other side, I mean, coming from more interested in natural science or physics, they didn't have any contact, or they didn't work together, unfortunately. Now, let's come to Deleuze and Guattari, 1980. They published together 1,000 Platos, in which rhythm was again considered as main philosophical subject. Rhythm was also to become essential in the movement image and the time image published in 1983 and 85 by Deleuze alone, which dealt with image and cinema. So I won't talk about those two books, only 1,000 Platos. It's an enormous work. So I will limit myself to a few pages devoted to La Ritournelle, the refrain. It has been translated in the refrain. Yeah? Deleuze and Guattari are contemplating the issue of individuation. I mean, the problem for them is individuation. And the forms that organize the flow of individuals are often identified with styles. That's a problem with the last books by Foucault. When he's referring to ethics at the end of his life, he's introducing this stylistic of utilisation de la vie, which is a problem. The writer gives a style, we say, to his writing, a style to his life. A group has a lifestyle, say sociologists, but this representation is itself embedded in one of the moments in the history of Western individuation, its individualistic moment. The style refers, in fact, to substantial unity, the body, the ego, the group, or the people, of which it is at the same time the expression and the manifestation. It is the form deployed in time of a subjective principle which is anterior to its realization. Moreover, style is also what makes possible to distinguish a singular or collective individual from other individuals. It is a temporal and aesthetic representation of the values of separation and independence that move modern individualism. It is therefore not capable of representing all cases of organization of the flow of individuation. Instead of style, they propose ritournelle. So another way of representing this organization is what Deleuze and Guattari have called la ritournelle, the refrain. The refrain denotes every set of expression material which traces a territory and which develops into territorial grounds, into territorial landscapes. That's the quote. Sometimes, as in the case of a child who is singing in the dark to reassure himself, the refrain creates a center, a beginning of order within the primordial chaos. Sometimes, for example, at the foundation of a city whose outlines are traced to the sound of ritual songs, it succeeds in organizing a limited space where the germinating forces are protected from external chaos. Sometimes, they say, it turns into improvisation and opens up the new spaces of a world of possibilities. The refrain is often sonorous and musical, but this primacy of sound is only apparent. For in reality, there are many other types of ritournelle: motor, gestural, optical, theoretical ritournelle. Thus, in each of these cases, the refrain organizes individuation as a rhythm, in the sense of rhythmos, naturally, not in the Platonic sense. But it does it quite differently from style, whereas the style presupposes a subjective antecedent unity of which it is only the expression. The refrain affirms itself as a matter of expression which traces a territory in its positivity, in its original character. It does not refer to anything other than itself and its own deployment. Moreover, whereas style identifies individuals by difference, the refrain seeks to free them from all logic of distinction. The refrain indicates an autonomous organization of individuation, just as the ideorhythm. So with their reflection on the ritournelle, Deleuze and Guattari were addressing the same kind of ethical and political issue as Lefebvre, Foucault, and Barthes. What was modern life worth, provided that it was organized through rhythms that were imposed upon the individuals? What alternative solutions could be imagined, provided that they should not limit themselves to the overthrow of the bourgeoisie or the destruction of the capitalist states? Let us notice, to finish with Deleuze and Guattari, that whereas Serre was interested in physics, they were discussing their subject mainly from life science, ethology. This is certainly another point that explains the absence of communication between these works. So from the last author I will speak about today is Mechanic. So from the 1970, he wrote mainly on rhythm. I mean, during the 70s, he wrote many books already on rhythm, but his most important one was published in 1982. It's a masterpiece. It's called Critique du rythme. It has never been translated into English, unfortunately, but it's 73 pages long. But this book presents 10 years of research about rhythm and language and literature. So, shall we turn to Mechanic in the second part of this seminar? So, I would like to now put those things together. And before examining Michonik's thoughts, like trying to recapitulate our first findings concerning this surprising rhythmic constellation which formed in the intellectual sky of the 1970s. Historically speaking, it seems quite obvious that the rise of this constellation can be accounted for by the huge change that occurred in our societies during the 1960s, 70s and 80s. After a deep crisis that started at the end of the 60s and lasted for most of the 70s, the late 70s and early 80s witnessed a rapid emergence of a new kind of capitalism. I mean, there was kind of shift at that time, you know, was Kohl, Thatcher, Reagan, they launched a new world based on neoliberalism. It was the very beginning of a deep mutation of our society. This was partly reminiscent of that which had occurred in the last decades of the 19th century, the first of the 20th century. There is something similar between the two periods. The new wave of trade, globalization, urbanization, development of new information, communication, reproduction technologies, financialization, triggered a kind of fluidization of our economies and societies. And these transformations had immediately drastic consequences for individuals. Body and language were subjected to demands for constant work, consumption, to bombardment of stimuli accentuated by the spread of information technologies, and to demands of flexibility that tended to fluidify, if not liquefy, our lives, as Zygmunt Bauman put it. Therefore, it seems no wonder that at the dawn of the huge mutation, some particularly perceptive thinkers resorted to the concept of rhythm, which had been used, as a matter of fact, to respond to similar mutation a century before. As at the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, rhythm seemed more fit to the new fluid societies that were emerging than structure and system. I studied some of these rhythmologies and rhythm analysis in my book, Rhythme, Pouvoir, Mondialisation. So this was my first inquiry, I mean, full inquiry into this period, 1880 up to until 1940. And at the beginning, I couldn't believe that I was right, but finally I find so many evidence that people were interested in rhythm, and there are plenty of evidence in this book. And as a matter of fact, some of these thinkers explicitly evoked rhythmic researches that had developed during the first part of the 20th century. For instance, Michonik drew from Mauss, Marcel Mauss, or from Benveniste. Deleuze relied heavily on Bergson and Whitehead. So I didn't talk about Whitehead, but this is very important too, in this matter. And Lefebvre put its steps in those of Bachelard. There were some links above this period of oblivion, this obscure period that I've mentioned at the beginning of my presentation. Scientifically speaking now, the first point worth noticing is the strategic use of the concept of rhythm. Rhythm was explicitly or implicitly used as the way to overcome the collapse of structuralism and the exhaustion of systemism, but also to oppose from the start the coming methodological individualism, which developed further in the 80s and 90s. And I think to curb the tendency of certain kind of Heideggerism and Nietzscheism to overplay dispersion, difference, and chaos. Indeed, in the late 1970s and the early 1980s, many intellectuals were trying to find new ways to push further critical thinking of the growing individualism and economic liberalism without falling into the traps of Heideggerian deconstruction, irony, and postmodern thinking that were to be eventually either quite benevolent to the coming world or quite inefficient in their critique of it. The second point concerns the lack of any direct continuation. At the time, The constellation we are now reconstructing never appeared as a collective movement. This is indeed the reason why I'm using the metaphor constellation, because the stars in constellation don't have any connection. They just are in the sky together, but they don't have any connections. Moreover, Barthes and Foucault died in 1980 and 84, and in 1918, Mechanic and Deleuze had no relation, as you mentioned, whatsoever, although they were teaching at the same university. Lefebvre was getting very old. He was born in 1901, so he was more like, he was 80 already, and he died in 1991. Serre and Morin were working in different directions. Were in the science department and philosophers, very different institutions. So this quite loose existence can account for the rapid fading of this constellation, rhythm which could have been a new common concept for critical thought, swiftly disappeared and receded into the dark until the second half of the 1990s, when it was rediscovered in many different disciplines, but with very few references to this short period of obscure glory, and I shall add, in a relative oblivion of its critical aspect. Instead, and this is the third point for my conclusion for this part of the seminar, I will repeat what I said in my presentation last year during the symposium organized by Paola and Julian Enriquez. Two other concepts began to occupy the space left by the progressive withdrawal of the structural and systemic paradigms. On the one hand, the concept of difference, which was presented as a legacy of Nietzsche's and Heidegger's critique of metaphysics, but which also presupposed a number of principles drawn from structuralism. On the other hand, the concept of individual. While in the first case, the difference model, the philosophy of temporality replaced linguistics as paradigm core, as discipline queen, in the second, the individualistic model was the economy that took the place of cybernetics, which was the discipline queen for systemism. It seems to me that none of these paradigms correspond any longer to the way our neo-capitalist world, both fluid and full of shocks, operates, and that these facts alone already reopens the space for rhythm, historical break, through which we have passed in the last 20 years, has made these theoretic models obsolete, while it gave again to rhythm an operative character.